Welcome to the media ministry of Crossroads Church Aspen. We hope you enjoy today's message. To learn more about Crossroads, visit our website at ccaspen.com.
When we had the opportunity to go to Israel, and God did amazing things there, and we want to share some of that with you. If you're like me, you probably say, Israel, there we go. Where is it? What is it? Give me a little quick geography.
So you're not here really going to be able to see very well.
Yeah. But we were going to turn it sideways, but then you'd be sitting like this trying to read the map. Israel is bordered on the west by the Mediterranean Sea, on the south by Egypt, on the east by Jordan, and on the north, Syria and Lebanon. So it's a tiny little country, approximately the size of Egypt.
No, New Jersey.
New Jersey. Yeah, that's what I said. The size of New Jersey.
Egypt's, not Egypt.
I got a little bit confused there. If you see the green kind of belt there, that's where the Jordan River goes through, right about in the middle. The blue part, that's the Dead Sea. Go from the top of the Dead Sea to your left about, I don't know, 20 miles, and that's where Jerusalem is, that whole area. Follow the Jordan River up to the north. That's where the Sea of Galilee is, and that's where the area that Jesus spent approximately 80% of his time in the region around the Sea of Galilee. You know, whenever you tell somebody you go to Israel or someplace else, the first question they always ask seems to be, who did you go with?
And I'm going to give a little plug for Daily Audio Bible here, because about 7 years ago, Mike and I started listening to a podcast, daily webcast, called Daily Audio Bible. And this man, Brian Harden, reads every day from the Old, New Testaments and Psalm and Proverbs. And you go through the Bible from January 1 all the way to the end of December, and you do a complete move through the entire Bible. So we've been doing that for about 6-7 years, and we love it so much, we're never going to stop. It allows the Word to just wash over you, and we feel like we've fallen in love with the author of the Bible because of it. Can't totally explain it, but if you happen to be interested, that's the way it looks when you go to the App Store, so you can download the app if you like. And it's also available on your computer at dailyaudiobible.com. And you can come to us if you have more questions about this. And please hear me that there are many ways to read through the Bible in a year. But we have seen the benefit of that consistency. It really has been amazing. So, yalla yalla, which means let's go in Hebrew.
When we thought about going, my goal, my vision, my dream was I am going to walk where Jesus walked. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to get pictures of my feet on the places where he walked. So we did it. Some of the places we went in the pictures here, Capernaum, which if you remember from reading about Jesus, that was one of his favorite places. And
he actually lived there.
He lived there quite a bit.
Yeah.
Not his whole life, but anyway. Yeah. The upper right, that stone is one of the... So we were able to stand there. We went to Magdala, which is where Mary Magdalene is from, another city around the Sea of Galilee. Those are original stones that were there in that area. The bottom right is really significant because those are some of the original steps to the south. That's the road to Emmaus, where the story happened after Jesus is resurrected and he meets the two guys. He was there. I got to say that when you walk in those places and you remember the stories from the scriptures, it's incredibly humbling to realize that this is the very place that Jesus walked. The God of the universe in human flesh was at that place. And you know, I thought I was ready for this trip, but I got to say, Derek told me, I said, I should have done this 20 years ago. It was so impactful. His comment was, you weren't ready for this 20 years ago. You would not have gotten as much out of it as you have now. And you're going to hear why.
So our trip began actually not in the footsteps of Jesus, but in the wilderness of Zin, the southern part of the country. And this is where the people, God's people, ended up wandering for 40 years. They had come out of Egypt through the Red Sea, and God had delivered them from harsh slavery. They came into the wilderness. He was trying to form a culture out of a bunch of slaves. And while they were there, you know, he gave the law, the Ten Commandments, all of that. But the people began to grumble, and they started to grumble against Moses and say, we wish we were back in Egypt. At least we had food. At least we had water. At least we, you know, we had a comfortable place to sleep. I doubt that, because they were slaves and they were making bricks every day out of straw. So anyway, they longed to go back to the way things once were. And as a consequence, they ended up wandering around in the desert for 40 years, because when God told them to go up and take the promised land, the spies went out, came back, and gave a very bad report that made the people fearful. And so they had to stay in the wilderness for 40 years. It was going to be the next generation that got to go into the promised land. And this turned out, I mean, this picture, it doesn't even capture how desolate that area is. You would have to depend on God or you wouldn't make it. You would have to be surrendered. It kind of puts Utah's desert, it makes it look like an oasis, actually. And it's not anything like, when you hear the word wilderness, you might think of the Maroon Bells wilderness or something. No. It's nothing like that. Very dry, very deserty, very desolate. A very lonely and awful place to be.
And while we're standing there overlooking this incredible expanse as far as you can see in every direction, absolute nothingness, we took some time to reflect on it. And the questions were, what's your wilderness been? How have you responded to being in the wilderness? How did you interact with God during that time? Did you rebel? Did you say, I want to go back to slavery? I don't want to go through the wilderness. I'd rather be back in Egypt. I don't like it out here. I don't like eating man. I don't like eating the quail. Or do you allow God to work deep in your heart? Well, the first question was real easy for me. What was your wilderness? And it took about 3 seconds, and I said, the last 6 years, God, have been a wilderness experience for me. Not all of it was wilderness. Not all of it was that deep and desolate. But there were times in there that it felt as dark as it could be. And it started with about 6 years ago, my dad's health problems, and then he had a heart attack. He didn't recover well. We thought he was going to. We thought God was going to do a miracle. And then he had a second heart attack and he died. At that point, I'm dealing with grief from that. I'm wondering, how am I going to handle the loss of my dad? And how am I going to take care of my mom, who's now a widow and is aging? And what is that process going to be like? During the same time, our son is playing college ball and they're in the tournament. And the final game that they lost at a heartbreaker, I looked at Kathy and I said, gee, it's a good thing that my dad's not alive, because this would have given a heart attack. It gave me a heart attack. And I ended up flight for life for Denver, had an encounter during this whole heart thing where death came to me just as real as my hand was there. And death said, what do you really believe? Do you believe this Jesus thing? Do you believe that you're forgiven and that you can have eternal life? And it was that real, and I said, yes, and instantly it was gone. Part of my wilderness experience on that. And so I look back and I think, well, what got me out of that? What was part of that process? Well, it was a lot of good friends. It was great community. And the regen process that we go through here at the church. So going through regen, I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot of the things that I was holding inside, things that I wasn't being honest with myself. I wasn't being honest with God. I wasn't being honest with others. And allowed God to do deep work, get to the root of those issues, and bring healing and restoration and redemption. Also part of that were John Eldridge and Dan Allender and their ministry of restoration of the heart. Those things really got to me at a deep level. And these are things that God brought back while we're standing there looking at this wilderness. It was an amazing emotional time. I was overcome, but I knew that God had taken me out of that wilderness and that he'd done a great work.
Do my job. Whoops. Sorry. I'm technology challenged. So we left the wilderness and headed north to the Sea of Galilee and the whole Galilee region. And it was an amazing thing. Such a picture going from the wilderness up to this just beautiful green. It was becoming spring there. And the sea itself pictured here is just so beautiful. It was pretty calm and gorgeous the whole time we were there. So we were really fortunate. I guess it can be rainy at this time of year. So anyway, we went there, and of course, as Mike said, that was where Jesus did 80% of his ministry, lived there, loved the people there, and ministered there and did amazing miracles there. It's where he walked, and he spent time with his friends. So we loved being there.
And I got to say that the wilderness was the first time that my focus changed from walking where Jesus walked to walking with Jesus. And the rest of the trip, it was so tangible. I could almost feel the literal presence of Jesus in my life as God is doing things in my heart. One of the places we went to that I really love, this is the city of Magdala. You've heard of Mary Magdalene? Well, this is where she came from. And this is the synagogue there. That whole area is small enough that you could put it in our sanctuary here. And the excavation there is very true to what it was, because there was only one building ever built on top of that. So they didn't have to do a lot to recreate it. And in the middle, you see that box. That would have been in the middle, and Jesus stood right there and used that to deliver his message. I was telling Dave that he probably put his notes there, and he goes, I don't think Jesus had notes for his messages. But you're that close, and you can see how much in context and contact people were with him as he's doing his teaching. It gives a whole new perspective as I read about Jesus in the synagogue, in his time with people, interacting with them. It's close. It's personal. They could touch him. They could feel him. They could hear him. So that was, I'll never read about any of these places and think of them the same. Another amazing place we went was Capernaum, and they like to call it the town of Jesus there. And this is the synagogue in Capernaum. And you can see that is also very small in scale. So if you're here listening to him, you're probably no further away than Jeff is from Jesus as he's teaching and as he's interacting people and as he's changing people's lives. So when we looked at that, you got to ask the question, if I were there in that synagogue and that close to him, how would I respond to Jesus? And what would I do with it? You go out of the synagogue and basically right across the street, this is the remains of Peter's house. He spent a lot of time there in Capernaum, a lot of time in Peter's house. He healed Peter's mother-in-law. And you see those rings around there? You might say, well, what are those for in his house? Well, the church was growing, and it needed to get bigger. So they built a bigger church to handle the growth on that.
Yeah, that was probably the first, house church, really. And so where people were coming to hear his teaching. And then
we went up a little further north, and this is the area of the Gadarenes. And if you remember the story, this is where Jesus comes across the Sea of Galilee, which would have been a great boat ride. I mean, I can see why you go, oh, they went across the Sea of Galilee to the other side. If you like water at all, you would love doing that. So he pulls up here, and a naked man comes running down to him at the water's edge, screaming and yelling and out of control. This is the man who was possessed by demons. And Jesus addresses the demons, and they say, don't be too harsh on us. Why don't you put us into this herd of pigs? And you see the hills there, they're just loaded with pigs and animals that are grazing. So Jesus casts the demons out of the man into the pigs. The pigs run down the shore. I always thought it was a cliff, but it's just shore. So they ran down the edge into the water, and they drowned. Well, the people there, now as you're standing there looking at it, you realize, how are they going to respond to this? This man who's been crazy and causing problems is normal. He's completely normal. And we're having a conversation with him. And all of our pigs are out there in the water floating. You know, they're dead. We've lost our livelihood, but we got this guy back. What are we going to do? Jesus comes into lives, and he disrupts them. And the people had to look at it and say, I don't like this, because it says then, let me open this up. The people at first were happy, and then eventually they asked him to leave because they couldn't handle the disruption. But in Mark chapter 5, verse 19, Jesus addresses the man who has been freed from the demons, and he says, go to your home, to your friends, and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. So I'm writing this in my journal and reflecting on it, and I go, God, you've disrupted my life in so many ways. What does this look like for me? And I'm having this deep emotional response to seeing what had happened there. What does that look like for me? Who are my friends that you want me to go talk to? And what does that mercy story look like? And this was profound. What is the story you're writing in my life that reflects your glory? As no one else's can. Jesus was walking with me at that point.
So I've already alluded to the fact that I just love the area around Galilee. And we had the opportunity to go out on a boat into the sea. And it was profound to be out there on the water. We, you know, kind of moved out into the middle, and they cut the engines on the boat. And Brian invited us into a covenant of silence for maybe about 10 minutes. Not very long, but it was profound. It made me realize how much noise I have in my life, and that you have to really fight for moments to be quiet before the Lord and listen for his voice. So this was an opportunity for that, and I loved it because it was silent, and it was almost deafening, except for the lapping of the water and a few birds in the air making noise. It was totally quiet. And I had jotted down just a few things in that setting, thinking about, Jesus, you calmed the storm right here on this lake. And you can calm all of the things that are stirring around in me. And you walked on the water here so you can do extraordinary things with me if I keep my eyes on you. And you went up the hill from here to sit and teach the people and deliver the Sermon on the Mount, which we actually experienced. We were at the Mount of the Beatitudes, and Brian chose not to talk about it so much, but he read the entire Sermon on the Mount to us in that setting, and then we had a chance to reflect on that. So that time in Galilee for me was really special, and actually I cried when we left there. We had been up there 4 days just going around to all these places, and I didn't want to leave. Even though we were headed to Jerusalem, we were going up to Jerusalem, and that phrase, going up to Jerusalem, is really a truth, because the Sea of Galilee actually sits below sea level, and Jerusalem is high up on a hill. It's really a great spot for that city. So we made our way to Jerusalem eventually for the last part of the trip, and these pictures are very hard to see, and we're sorry about that. They actually are pictures of where Christ was supposedly born. They are the ones that are historically the sites, where his birth took place, the manger, where that was, and then the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, which is where Calvary is, and where he was crucified, and where he rose from the dead. And so the empty tomb is there as well. The difficulty when you look at these pictures, and even when you're there, is that it's not like a Christmas card, and it's not like an Easter card, and it's not like even what you read in the Bible when you try to visualize the scene, because over thousands of years, people have been trying to explain a mystery that is unexplainable. And so they've used art and architecture. And even at the Church of the Nativity, there are Christmas decorations hanging around, and chandeliers and mosaics and paintings and just all kinds of stuff. And you have to get down below the surface, which you can in some little spaces, to actually see the real spots. And Brian did a good job of preparing our hearts for that, because certainly Jerusalem is not exactly like it was back in Jesus' time. And that became very clear when we went to these sites. Even so, it was really significant and special to visit those places and to just remember. And of course, it's where we are in the calendar right now, being at Palm Sunday. And so we stood on the Mount of Olives and looking over to the city, which that's what this picture is, and you can see the golden dome of the rock, which is the Muslim shrine on the Temple Mount, and just to the right of that is where the temple really stood. And so it was profound to drive to the spot, get off of our bus, and stand and look over at the city much the same way Jesus would have when he was getting ready to go into Jerusalem to die. And so because it's Palm Sunday, I just wanted to take a moment to read Matthew 21, verses 1 to 9. And honestly, I wish I was over there right now, because it would be great to stand there and read this right where it happened. But Matthew 21, starting in verse 1, it says, "Now when they drew near to Jerusalem and came to Bethphage, to the Mount of Olives, then Jesus sent two disciples, saying to them, 'Go into the village in front of you, and immediately you will find a donkey tied and a colt with her. Untie them and bring them to me. If anyone says anything to you, you shall say, "The Lord needs them," and he will send them at once." This took place to fulfill what was spoken by the prophet, saying, "Say to the daughter of Zion, behold, your king is coming to you, humble and mounted on a donkey and on a colt, the foal of a beast of burden." The disciples went and did as Jesus had directed them. They brought the donkey and the colt and put on them their cloaks, and he sat on them. Most of the crowd spread their cloaks on the road, and others cut branches from the trees and spread them on the road. And the crowds that went up before him and that followed him were shouting, "Hosanna to the Son of David. Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. Hosanna in the highest." And when he entered Jerusalem, the whole city was stirred up, saying, "Who is this?" And the crowd said, "This is the prophet Jesus from Nazareth in Galilee." And that, by the way, is the Mount of Olives and near the Garden of Gethsemane.
And when Jesus entered into Jerusalem then, he would have come to these steps, the south step. And when Jesus entered into Jerusalem then, he would have come to these steps, the south steps once again, so that he could go into the temple. And when I stood there and I was trying to figure out, okay, here's where he came in, where's the Mount of Olives, where's the garden, how did he get here? And I just looked up to the left, and Brian explained, well, he came over this hill from Bethany, he stood right there, he looked over Jerusalem, and then he followed that path down. God overwhelmed me to think that I was standing on the spot where Jesus was going to come, that he had made a plan with the Father from the beginning of eternity, that he was going to redeem mankind, that he was going to make a way for us to be right with God. I was standing in that spot and looking where he would have come and how he would have felt coming into Jerusalem. I lost it. I probably stood there for 10 minutes just sobbing because the reality of that had come to me. So this was the triumphal entry, but we can't, you know, leave the story there. And next week we'll move into Easter and Jesus' crucifixion. So after several things happen, the Last Supper, and Jesus spends time with his disciples, he goes up to Gethsemane to pray. And this was the Garden of Gethsemane. And you can imagine how beautiful it was back then, just an incredible olive garden, well-kept and just spectacular. From there, he could look and see over to Jerusalem, over to the, you know, the old city of Jerusalem, and he could see the torches of the men coming to get him, to take him away. He knew that his life was going to be sacrificed in just a few days, and he willingly did it. He prayed, "God, if you can take this cup from me, if there's any other way other than this, do it." But he submitted and said, "God, not my will, but yours." So this is what he would have been seeing in the nighttime, and imagine people walking with torches coming to get him. They took him from there to the quarters of the high priest and Caiaphas. And if you read the account in the Gospels, they beat him. They flogged him. They abused him. And they threw him in this dungeon, which is down below. It's been excavated out. And that's where he spent the night, waiting for the rest of the story to unfold. From there, he could hear probably Peter around the courtyard.
Yeah. It's mind-blowing to be in this place. It's pretty much your undoing when you think that our Lord suffered so much and was put into a place like this, and then there's the courtyard outside where he very likely heard Peter denying him. And so, yeah, just being down there was an incredible, like a heart touch point, I guess you would call it. And then going upstairs, or up out of that, you would see this.
And these are the stairs that led from that dungeon area. They're the original steps. I don't know if I can do this. So Jesus walked, after spending the night in that prison, up to Caiaphas's quarters. The picture on the right is the foundation work where Jesus would have had to face the religious leaders, and where they were going to condemn him and take him from there over to Pilate and head to his crucifixion. And when I stood where that picture on the right is taken, I literally had no breath. All the air went out of my lungs and I couldn't breathe, because I realized I am looking now firsthand where they condemned Jesus and what he did willingly for me, to die for me. I just couldn't breathe.
So, of course, we know the rest of the story, and goes to the cross willingly, and he comes out of the grave, which is what we'll celebrate next week. And we did get to experience that, like I said, there in Jerusalem. But then afterwards, you know, he doesn't stay in Jerusalem, but he appears to his disciples. And one of the places that he first appears is on the road to Emmaus. And I have to say, that has always been one of my favorite stories in the Bible. So this is the road to Emmaus. We went to Emmaus, and it's ruins there. There's a church there, ruins of a church. I love that story so much, because when the two men, you know, say to him, what has happened? And then they're questioning him, are you the only person that doesn't know what has happened in Jerusalem? And then he unfolds the scriptures to them. And after he leaves them, when they realize who it was, they said, were not our hearts burning within us when he opened the scriptures to us? And I have always loved that, because that's what I want the word to do to my heart. And I feel like the more I spend time in it, it's doing that. And being there really brought that into focus. I will never read the Bible the same way again. And let's go. Oh, I got it.
Sorry, Jerry. Hold on.
Oh, my gosh, Jerry, I got into your songs. Oh, dear. Oh, dear. Everything was going well until I'm hitting the button. Can anybody help me? You know, actually, it's a picture of the Sea of Galilee again. Same one we showed you earlier. And the reason we put this at the end is because, oh, there it is. Yay. We were there on that shore, and that is where Jesus was cooking a breakfast. He kind of resumed a little bit of normal life there, cooking breakfast of fish for his disciples that were out on that lake fishing, not catching much. And he says to them, hey, try throwing your net over the other side. And when they get such a huge catch, John leans over to Peter and says, it's the Lord. And Peter, I love Peter, he throws himself into the water to get to Jesus as fast as he can. And literally standing there in that spot that commemorates that, that was my undoing. Just thinking of Peter, I love him because he's impetuous, but he's so loved the Lord. And even though he denied him, this is the place where he was restored. And Jesus said, you know, do you love me? Three times. And so Peter went on to be just a rock in the church. So I left there just thinking, and I welled up there. That's part of the reason why I didn't want to leave Galilee. You know, I want that kind of reckless abandon with my Lord. I want that kind of passion. And I know a lot of times I don't have it. But I am on the journey, and I hope you are too, that we would be just seeking God, that we would have greater passion for him. So I didn't want to leave that place. The whole trip to Israel was epic for us, life-changing. As I said, I'll never read the Bible the same way. I don't know, Mike, if you have anything else you wanted to say or how to leave this. But
well, before we come to the table and worship through singing a few more times, just encourage you to take some time. Hopefully we've encouraged you through this story, through what God has done in our hearts, and take some time, just you and God, and ask him, God, what about my wilderness? What do you want to do there? How do you want to restore me? Or maybe it's some other part of Jesus' life, but take a few minutes, just you and God, and ask him to speak to your heart.
Thank you for listening to this message. To hear other messages or learn more about Crossroads Church, visit our website at ccaspen.com.